श्रील गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, श्री श्री गौर गदाधर जी की जय, श्री राधा गोविंद देव की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतन की जय, श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रमाण प्रणाम। गुड मॉर्निंग टू ऑल ऑफ यू, वेलकम अगेन, थैंक्स सो मच फॉर योर प्रेजेंस, क्रूशियल अटेंशन एंड सिंसियरिटी, मोर देन 50%, एंड we will continue today with our series of morning katha about Sri Brahma Stuti, or the prayers of Sri Brahma, which we started here yesterday. Yesterday we make a brief summary of the whole series. So today I just make a brief recap of yesterday's class, as we will be doing these days. So yesterday we were studying verse 28, where Brahma was speaking about the necessity of dismissing, if you will, the unreal in order to accept reality, something like that. So I'll read the verse quickly in English, some words, and then we go to today's shloka. So verse 28 says like this: O unlimited Lord, the sadhus seek you within their own bodies by rejecting everything separate from you. Indeed, do people who have common sense reach for a rope without making sure that it is not a snake? So that was verse 28 from yesterday. So our Purvacharyas have commented in this connection how the sadhus reject everything that it's not Krishna. And of course, the question then came, so what is not Krishna? From the Abheda side of the equation, we have Ved Abheda. So Abheda means non-different. So everything is non-different from Krishna. Everything is Krishna in one sense. We are not Advaita bodies, but half of our equation is everything is God. But we have a second half of the equation, which adds the spice of diversity. They say that diversity is the spice of life. Variety is the spice of life, they say. So if there is no variety, there is no spice, no masala, no rasa, no taste. If there is only diversity, there is conflict. There's only unity, it's boring. So we want the two of them. We want the best of the two, unity and diversity. So that's our metaphysics. Ved Abheda. Achintya Ved Abheda Tattva. So when we say sadhus reject that which is not Krishna, means sadhus reject that type of mentality in which you are not seeing the connection to Krishna. Krishna is the source of everything. Everything as an energy of Krishna. Everything as a Shakti of Shaktimam. We used those expressions yesterday. And we connected this with the idea of Sambandha, which is this knowledge that educates our eye to see how everything has an intrinsic connection with Krishna, with its source. Krishna is the source of everything, so everything must be conceived, if you will, existing in connection to its source. So we as bhaktas are trying to acknowledge that connection, starting with us, because we are one of those energies. We are an aspect of one energy of Bhagavan. So, on the opposite, not seeing that connection, that's what we call Maya Shakti. The influence of Maya Shakti makes us, the very word Maya is defined sometimes as that which is not. It seems it is, but it is not. So through the lens of Maya Shakti, we see Krishna is not in the center. I am in the center. So we don't need to get out of the center, but we need to realize we were never in the center. No matter how we try to be the center, it doesn't work. We cannot be there. So Maya means you are trying to be something that it will never happen. Better to acknowledge what's reality. So anyhow, the idea was whatever exists is Shaktiman, the source of all energies, and Shakti, the different potencies. And all these energies are destined for his pleasure, for his service. So this is the main emphasis of yesterday's verse. And making this point, in order to understand reality, first you have to be sure that you are not having any misunderstanding of reality. Maybe we have to deconstruct first some wrong ideas before trying to approach the proper idea. Because if not, we may be superimposing a wrong conception of something which is different.
Can you explain?
Like the example I gave yesterday with the one, the teacher of the one who wants to learn harmonium. That one has an idea of how things are, but it's wrong. So first, before knowing what's correct, you have to deconstruct the wrong idea, and then you can understand what's the real thing.
Like sarvopadi vinirmuktam.
Basically, yeah. To get free from all these upadis, this is a famous verse that Krishna Chandra Prabhu quoted, is one of the main definitions of what's bhakti. On the basis of this verse, Srila Rupa Goswami composed his own verse. Anyabhilasita sunyam jnana karmadhyanabhritam. Nakulina Krishna Nusilanam Bhakti Rutma. But this other verse is Sarvopadi Vinirmoktam Tatparatuena Nirmalam Hrishikina Hrishikesa Sivanam Bhakti Ruchati. So the first line says Sarvo Upadi Vinirmoktam. Today in the morning you were praying to Gopeshwar Mahadev, right? What's the last line of the mantra you pronounce? It starts with Prem. I'm giving a hint. Prem Preacha Nirupadi. So the word nirupadi is there. So nirupadi is basically this idea. Sarvupadi vinirmukta. Nirupadi means becomes free from upadi. Upadi means designations, labels that we have on ourselves and reality. This is this, but which is false. Mahaprabhu will say naham vipro na chana rapatin na vivaisyonash, rejecting all this upadi. Going too quick?
No, sorry.
So this verse saying sarva upadi, all upadis, you have to get free from them. But it doesn't say sarva upadi muktam. It says sarva upadi bi nir muktam. I once saw one lecture by Bhakti Balabh Tirtha Maharaj. He was almost screaming while explaining this verse, very emotionally. He would say, we need not only to get free from all upadis, muktam, but this verse saying be near mukta. Mukta means to get free from. Near mukta means to be fully free. And be near mukta means to be absolutely, completely, and he started to totally, absolutely, completely free from all upadis. So yeah, that's the way to approach. From the positive and from the negative side. What to accept, what to not accept, basically. Ambayabhyatireka vyam. Truth is to be approach it directly and indirectly. What it is, what it is not. Sometimes for many of us, first it helps to know what it is not. And then we start to understand what it actually is. Because sometimes we may just project in prejudice that we already have on something and think, oh yeah, that's that. No, it's not that. No, it's not that. I remember reading this book by Eric Fromm, The Art of Loving, I don't know how you call it in English. Okay. And he defines love, but before defining what's love, he is the long chapter who says what love is not. And if you survive that chapter, you can know what love is according to him. But first he starts to approach all the more general misconceptions about love. So love is not this that you think it is. It is not this that you think it is. And the reader is like, oh my God, this was my idea of love. So this is not love? Okay. This is not love? Okay. This is not love? Okay. So what is love? At one point you're asking to yourself, so what is? So then you are ready to hear positively, this is love. You follow. So sometimes this type of system is very necessary. So anyhow, some brief words regarding yesterday's verse. This was the last verse of a section of prayers, in the bigger section of prayers of Brahma. And today we are beginning another new section in the Brahma Stuti, in the prayers of Brahma. Almost the last section. Not the last, but almost the last. And in this section of verses, beginning from today and ending on the last day of lecture here, so it was not organized on purpose, it just happened in this last series of verses, Brahma will gradually escalate, if you will, more and more, in his expression of longing for Brajabhav, for his attainment of a position of service in Vrindavan. In today's verse and in tomorrow's verse, that won't be fully clear, in the sense he's not directly saying Vrindavan, but we will see how he's implying all this. And gradually he cannot contain it, that will become more apparent, more clear, not directly, more and more. But we go gradually. He's building his presentation in a gradual way. So let's go to today's verse then, which is verse 29. We have it there. Krishna Chandrapur very generously wrote it. I don't know if you prefer that we bring it here. It may be more...
Yes.
It's easier for maybe them to see. I don't know who wants to have it. So I'll recite it once, and then we can recite it all together. Always above our heads, Srimad Bhagavatam, just in case. No? So this verse has two chandas, or 2 meters. Some verses of Brahma Stuti combine two meters. The first 2 lines is in 1 meter called Vamsastabilam, and the second 2 lines is in Upajati Chanda. So you will feel it's a little bit like irregular. No? But sometimes our acharyas will say, well, that's not a mistake on the part of Brahma, it's just because of his...
excessive.
Yeah, something is moving, so some imperfection... basic, quote unquote, like when Arjuna is praying to Krishna, when Krishna is showing, giving Vishvarup Darshan, showing the universal form, there are a few verses that the meter is irregular. You won't find almost in any verse in the Gita that. In that moment, there's one verse that is lacking some syllable. So someone say, oh, this is a mistake. Acharya said, no. This is further illustrating the emotional condition of Arjuna. So that's actually an ornament. No, it's not doshana, it's bhushana. No? Doshana means a fault, and bhushana means ornamentation, no? Something beautifies. So yeah, this is the same, similarly. No? 2 lines in one sense, you can see, shorter, too long. And Brahma, you know, is very scholar person, he knows everything, meter, chanda, so he should know. But he's knowing something else here, so... So it says like this. I'll recite first and then we do it together. Atapiti deva padambuja dvaya prasadalisa nugrihita ivahi. Sorry. Janati tatvam bhagavan mahimna nachanya eko pichiram bichinvan. Can we recite all together?
Atapiti deva padambuja dvaya prasadalesanugrihita evahi janati tattvam bhagavan mahimna nachanya eko pichiram bichinvam.
Great. So I'll read the translation, share with you, and then we will go word by word and so on. So Brahma is saying here, O Lord, only one who is favored by even a slight trace of the grace of your lotus feet can understand the glory of you, Bhagavan. anyone else, despite being eminent seekers who try to understand you for a long time, are unable to know you. So this is today's verse, basically. So Brahma is creating this contrast. The first part he's mentioning, you can only be known by a slight trace of your grace. That's today's theme, a slight trace of your grace. So only you can be understood by in that way. That's the method. And Brahma is walking the talk. He has experience of how this works. And anyone else, even if it's a great thinker, big personality, if they try to approach you independently of your mercy, they cannot know you. So that's today's verse. Sounds simple, but we will see how many layers of complexity and context is there, content is there. So let's recite the word by word first. I'll recite one word as we did yesterday. You can repeat, then we go to the translation and you repeat and so on. Atapi.
Atapi.
Nonetheless.
Nonetheless.
De.
De.
Your.
Your.
Deva.
Deva.
O Lord.
O Lord.
Pada ambujadvaya.
Ambujadvaya.
Of the two lotus feet.
Of the two lotus feet.
Prasada.
Prasada.
You know that one?
Mercy.
Lesha.
Lesha.
By only a trace.
Only a trace.
Anugrihita.
Anugrihita.
Favored.
Favored.
Iba.
Iba.
Only.
Only.
He.
Indeed.
Janati,
Janati
knows,
knows.
Tatvam,
Tatvam
the truth,
the truth.
Bhagavat Mahimna,
Bhagavat Mahimna
about the glory of you, Bhagavan,
about the glory of you, Bhagavan.
Na,
na,
never,
never.
Cha,
cha,
and
anyaha,
anyaha,
another,
ekapi,
ekapi,
although foremost,
although foremost,
chiram,
chiram,
for a long time,
for a long time,
bichinvan,
bichinvan,
while seeking,
while seeking.
Okay. We'll give a rest to Krishna Chandrapuram.
You can explain by signs, sir.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can imagine them.
He does the mudra, simultaneously mudra translation of that. Jaman Krishna Chandrapuram ki
jai.
So let's begin as we have been doing these days. I'll begin first sharing the Bhavanuvad, or the elaboration of this verse that my Guru Maharaj wrote for his forthcoming book. And then we will share some further ideas coming from our Purvacharyas, our Goswamis, and so on. So, some interesting things are coming. Seat belts fastened already? Okay, just in case. Having presented deep philosophical truths over so many verses, all the previous ones, Brahma glorifies here the playful nature of Krishna in his Sakya Rasa Lila. How? Referring to him as such, with the word Deva. We will explain that now. Deva means playful, one of the meanings. And Brahma asserts that despite, asserts is like confirms, that despite what he has said about Krishna till now, Krishna can only be known as such, as Krishna, by his own grace. Indeed, no face of the Godhead can be known without his grace. What to speak of Krishna. Here Brahma speaks of a fraction of Krishna's grace. The word less. And in so doing, he emphasizes further that without some small measure of bhakti, those pursuing Brahma Sayujya, or impersonal liberation, will not be successful, regardless of how qualified they may be otherwise. Even if one desires to attain Krishna's quality-less, indeterminate feature, Nirvishesh Brahman, one requires his quality of compassion, his grace, basically, no? That Brahma is pointing to here. So this is my Guru Maharaj's commentary on this verse. So there are some interesting points to elaborate upon with your permission. Or without it. I have to be bold sometimes. And then we will turn to our Purvacharis. So again, here we are turning to another section of the Brahma Stuti. Until now, Brahma has laid a very deep Siddhantic foundation for his case. Krishna is tu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the ultimate face of the divine. So after doing his homework nicely in the first like 28 verses, he lays the ground, he lays the foundation of Siddhanta or Tattva. Now he, Brahma, starts to gradually express the bhava he's longing for, or the type of emotion, relationship he will like to attain with Krishna in eternity. But this bhava will arise with the support of Tattva. I always like to say that bhava is a philosophical emotion. What do I mean by this? All of us can be emotional. I mean, you don't need Siddhanta to have emotions. Everyone has emotions, but not very profound. If I have anger, envy, all those are emotions also. You don't need Siddhanta to be envious. You need the opposite of that. But if you want to attain bhava, bhava means emotion. But it's not just any emotion. It's an emotion that is sustained on Siddhanta. That's why it's so important to learn Siddhanta first, to know the tattva. Because on that basis, you develop this emotion called bhava or bhava bhakti. And part of this learning the Siddhanta, learning the tattva will be, at least, maybe we are not in bhava yet, we are in sadhana, sadhana bhakti. There are three stages of bhakti. Sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, prem bhakti. I mean, there are many stages, you can speak in many ways about that. Rupa Goswami spoke about three. Of course, sadhana bhakti includes from Shraddha to Asakti. Shraddha, sadhu, sangha, bhajana, kriyanartha, nivritti, nista, rucha, asakti. But let's put it sadhana bhakti. So sadhana bhakti means you have not attained bhava yet, but in sadhana you study and you start to appreciate bhava in theory. In theory you become schooled. What's bhava? What's the reality of bhava about? You are not there yet, but you hear about that and you appreciate on a theoretical level the emotional reality of bhava. So you lay this foundation of Siddhanta for that. And then that takes you to bhava. So Brahma is making this point. He will speak in like in 6-7 verses about his bhava, his longing. Bhava is characterized by longing. Lalasa, lalasa mai. While sadhana is characterized by surrender. That's an important point to know. I mean, it doesn't mean that there is no surrender in bhava and that there is no some type of longing before bhava. But the main feature of sadhana or the practitioner stage, most is working on surrender, saranagati and so on, this foundation. And then when come longing in every sense of the term. There will be some longing before, But in Bhava Bhakti, longing with capital letters. So again, Brahma's budding Bhava is coming to the surface here. No? His, as we mentioned, his desire to attain a relationship with Krishna in Sakya Bhava. So my Guru Maharaj mentions, that's why he's using here this word, Deva. In all the verses of Brahma Stuti, different names for Krishna are used. Not only in Brahma Stuti, throughout the Bhagavad and in the Gita, different names are being used. And we should never think that they are using just different names. Whatever comes to mind, they call Krishna with that name. There's some purpose for each name, and not other name being used. It's not that just a matter of meter. Remember, Brahma is not concerned about meter here. He's making a whole mess with the meter due to ecstasy. Mm-hmm. But the names that he's invoking in every verse have some deep purpose. Mm-hmm. So here he's calling Krishna Deva and Bhagavan. These are the two names used in this verse. So we will see today why those two names and not others. Krishna has unlimited names. But he's choosing specific names in each verse. So Deva is connected to Brahma's longing for Sakya Bhava. How? The word Deva in general is translated as God. You have the Devas, the gods, Krishna Deva, the God. But interestingly, the root of the word Deva in Sanskrit, the Dhatu, is Div. Many meanings. Yeah, one is to shine, but another is to play. So by Brahma calling Krishna Deva, he's pointing at Krishna's playful nature. And Krishna is not so playful in Dwarka. No? He has to be all like king and prince giving orders and so on. He's playful in Braj. Of course, he's playful in Braj in all his features. If you analyze Krishna in Kumar with Yashoda and Nanda, playful. With the gopis in Madhurya, playful in another way. And with his friends, of course, playful. I mean, you with friends, you play. No? You don't do anything else apart from that. Your mom comes to call you, it's time for dinner. I say, I don't want to eat. I just want to continue playing for eternity. So here Brahma, is, with the word Deva, is pointing to the Sakya playfulness, if you will, of Krishna. My Guru Maharaj makes a nice point that I would like to share with you. He says, that's a good one. He says, when you are boring, what do? He will say, you play. So he says, similarly, Krishna is God from some level. No? But my Guru Maharaj will say, to be God is boring. Because to be God means you are, for example, omnipresent. Omnipresent means you are everywhere. Which means you cannot go anywhere because you are already there. There's nowhere to go. You're already there. He's omniscient. He knows everything. There's nothing to know, in one sense.
He cannot be surprised.
Basically, that's the implication. There's no chamatkar, no aho. On the God platform, again, we worship something, not God, we worship God beyond God, Krishna, remember. But God, omniscient, omnipotent, all these omnis, we may think, oh, I would like to know everything. I would like to reach everyone's mind. You don't know what you are asking for. No. The one who is all those omnis is saying, I'm bored to death here. This is boring. So Krishna is boring by being God. Trinavarta is coming?
Trinavarta.
Okay. Trinavarta ki jai. I will clarify for those connected online that may be afraid that we are about to die all here or something. We are staying here in the Alps in Switzerland, so the only way to reach the place here is by helicopter or walking.
It's a devotee who has cancer is now coming.
So there are a group of devotees who are coming now to join us in the retreat here, and they have just arrived in the Trinavarta-like helicopter, which sounds like Trinavarta. He's very friendly. He's not an asura. So just clarifying for you to not be afraid or wonder all this noise and sound, what's taking place and so on. So Vaishnavas are arriving. That's worthy of celebration. There are no asuras coming.
No.
So, should I continue? You can hear me?
Yes. Second, it's just here.
Oh, really? So I'll continue 1 second. Helicopter is leaving now.
Shanti again.
Okay. It's good sometimes to have some contrast so you appreciate the value of silence. Negative impetus. No, noise brings negative impetus to appreciate the silence. Okay. So we were on God is boring. Bored. No? It's boring to be God, basically. All these omnis are making Krishna, I'm bored. So I will play. So when you are bored, you play. Play means lila. That's the only thing that God does, Krishna does. Lila, playing. Srila Siddhar Maharaj, once I heard he said regarding Sri Krishna Prem, Swami Krishna Prem, we were speaking the other day with Krishna Chandra Prabhu. Sri Krishna Prem, long story about him, you can ask Krishna Chandra Prabhu about his story later. But he's basically one of the first Western Gaudiya Vaishnavas, if not the first. Who went to India and was initiated eventually in the Radharaman tradition. But very wonderful story. Before, he was a pilot of a plane in the World War. And at one point his plane was hit by the enemy, if you will. He was about to die. And he had some sort of epiphany in which there are very many different varieties to the story. The one I heard is that he was atheist before that. And that when the plane was coming down, he was feeling, I think I mentioned that the other day, like, if God exists, he will save me and I will look for him. So he survived, and he started to look for him, and he went to India, long story short. And Srila Siddhar Maharaj said that when he went to India, he thought, okay, I'll go to India, we'll find God relatively quickly. But in the beginning, he found Ganesh, Shiva, Durga, Brahma, Krishna, Vishnu, Narayan, Lakshmi, Saraswati, like a whole pantheon that it has no end. So he said, so now I'm more overwhelmed than before. No? And so Srila Siddhar Maharaj said that he started to analyze what each of these figures were doing. And he saw Mahadev is meditating on someone. Brahma is busy creating. So here, everything is doing something. Everyone has something to do.
A duty.
Yeah, a duty. When he got to Krishna, he's not doing nothing. He's just enjoying life. And he concluded, he had this intuition, he must be God. Very interesting. Of course, previous samskaras to reach that conclusion. But he saw Krishna say, he has nothing to do. He's just celebrating life. Absorbed in Leela. He must be God. And of course he became a Gaudiya Vaishnava eventually. But he got this idea again of div, which is means God and means to play. My Guru Maharaj would like to say, in order to play, you need to have power. So the two ideas are not contradictory, God and play. For example, if you as an adult would like to go on holidays, let's say, to play as an adult, you need power, which means you need money in the bank. If you don't have money in the bank, you cannot play. You cannot, or if you are a child, you are playing because your parents are maintaining you, so you can play. But their power is there in the background. They are working and feeding you, and you are playing. So for play to happen, some power has to be sustaining that. So the more the play, the more the power behind. So when you find that manifestation of God that is only playing, means that's the almost powerful form of God. So that's Krishna. Fully playful, but fully powerful at the same time. This is what Brahma saw some minutes ago. Remember, the highest degree of Aishwarya coming from little Krishna. Narayan's expanding from him. So much power, but so much play. So Aishwarya is there in the background of Madhurya. So this is the idea of Deva, and so many more things, but just for you to have a glimpse of what these four letters are implying. And for Brahma in particular here. So, also one perspective that my Guru Maharaj mentioned before, going back to his commentary, is that not only Brahma is speaking here for himself, those who want to know you, Krishna, require your mercy, but even those who are not interested in you, but want Brahma Sayuja, impersonal merging, also need your mercy. Because without bhakti, you cannot attain mukti. That's mentioned in Shastra over and over again. If you are threading the path of gyan to attain mukti, at one point you have to mix your gyan with bhakti. Of course, if you think deeply, you will realize if to be successful in gyan, I need to mix it with bhakti. If to be successful in yoga, I need to mix it with bhakti. If to be successful in karma, I need to mix it with bhakti. What if I only practice bhakti? If bhakti is so crucial and every other sadhana needed to be successful, what if I just embrace bhakti exclusively? So here we are trying to do that by the grace of Krishna and the parampara. So the point is this, if those who are not interested in Krishna but just mukti, this nonetheless need Krishna's grace in the form of bhakti, what to speak of us who are actually interested in Krishna personally, how much we need his grace, how much we should feel dependent on his kripa. Now, one important point, Brahma is saying, you can only be known by your grace. So this can be like a, how do you say in English, razor's edge or something? Because our path is a descending path. No? This is called in Sanskrit avaroha panta, in musical terms. We have aroha panta and avaroha panta, like ascending and descending, like the notes. No? So aroha panta means ascending process. Now you are trying to elevate by your own effort and reach Krishna. Like constructing, like one song was there, stairway to heaven. So we are not so much interested in a stairway to heaven. Jai Gaur Hari Bol. Welcome. But we are not so interested in a stairway to heaven, but we're interested in a stairway from heaven. A descending process, not an ascending process. So, the fact that we need so much Krishna's mercy, and this is a path of mercy, and not so much an effort-based path as yoga or gyan, doesn't mean that we shouldn't make any effort. So that's an important point. What's the role of effort in a path of grace? Ours is a path of grace. Does it mean that I shouldn't make any effort? I should be lazy, probably? So there is something we have to do. My Guru Maharaj likes to say, we have to do an effort so we can obtain grace. I mean, grace is not depending on what I do. Grace is coming, but if I'm not doing my best, I may not appreciate. the grace that is coming. And costless grace also means something that I'm not deserving. Costless grace doesn't mean priceless grace. We have to do something ourselves. We have to pay some currency. That's the price to pay. The famous example is if you fall into a hole, like 20 meters hole, you didn't know, but anyhow, you ended there. What can you do from... There's something you have to do. You can go out by yourself, but there's something you have to do.
Scream.
Oh, basically. That may be your prayer at that time. Yeah. But it's just shouting and screaming for help. Nobody can do that for you. But that's the only thing you can do. It seems insignificant, but only you can do that. So you will shout for help, and someone will help hear you, and go, and look, and be compassionate. Say, okay, I'll go and bring one rope, the person will say. You just wait. You cannot do too much. You just... Hopefully not a snake. You have to trust. At this situation, you have to trust. So the person comes and, I will throw you a rope. Take it. And you have to take it, even if it's a snake. If it's a snake, you will be dead with or without a snake if they are not saving you. So the rope comes, and now comes another part that you have to do, which is take the rope. Nobody else can do that. You have to hold onto the rope. It sounds insignificant, but that's your part. The other person is doing the main thing, go and bring in the rope, throw in the rope, taking you out, which takes so much energy. You're just holding. Someone is taking you out. But you have to hold the rope. If you throw the rope, you follow my point. So there is grace, but there's effort on your part. It doesn't sound too much effort, but you have to do that part. And maybe your hands maybe start to hurt. Oh, this rope is not made of silken. It's not a silken rope. It's my heart has been hurt. You will tell the person, maybe I will throw the rope. The person says, no, hold the rope. Tolerate some difficulty. I'm saving you. You are being redeemed. Tolerate a little bit. And maybe there are some bees on one part of the hole. Oh, then some bees will bite me. Let the bees bite you, no problem. You are being saved. So eventually the person takes you out of the hole, saves you. And you had to do your part, but you will never tell that person, did you see how nicely I hold on the rope? You won't say that. You'll say, you saved my life. You follow? You won't take pride in, I did so nicely, I did my part. No, you won't be But you had to do that part. But you are very clear, my part was this, and the other part was this, so you saved my life. So that's grace, but effort means I have to do one part. As insignificant as nobody can do it for me. So bhakti is individual, it's collective, we need each other, but also it's individual.
So it's 50-50? Something like this?
Yeah, if you want to put it like that. Of course, we may switch the number, but the point is there is something expected from us. No, we are not just passive consumers of grace. No? It's not like going to a supermarket, like tasting grace, oh, thank you so much, but there's something expected from our side. So yeah, we could say that's our 50% in the equation as seekers, inquirers. Brahma is speaking here as eminent seekers. Now, even if you are an eminent seeker, if you don't receive Krishna's grace, you cannot know him. So Brahma is one of those eminent seekers. Remember, you go back to the very beginning of creation, and Brahma was sitting on the lotus flower, and he really searched. He's like the very personification of seeking. He started to go down to the lotus stem, looking for his source for years and years. Nothing, never ending. The stem never ending. So he returned. As we know, he heard the word tapa, he meditated, and so on. But he never, the point is, he never met Krishna by his own strength, by his own will. Only when Krishna wanted to show himself, he saw Krishna. Brahma says that in previous verses, he recalls that experience. He said, no matter how much I searched, I never found you. But then you show me your grace, and I could, and I embraced sadhana. You gave me, I hear some voice, some instruction, I put that in practice, and you show it to me. You show yourself to me. You gave me your darshan in my heart, antar darshan. So Brahma says, and I saw you. And then after I seen you, you disappeared. And I tried to see you again, but I couldn't. Like making this point, I can only see you when you want to be seen, not when I want to see you. It's not the key is not in my hands. I cannot decide. I will want to see Krishna. So, Srila Siddhar Maharaj will say, if you are approaching the infinite, the door is locked and the key is in Krishna's hand. So you can knock, but you cannot open the door yourself. He will open the door according to your knocking. Sometimes you have to wait after knocking. Knocking on Heaven's Door, also another song. So, no? So you have to call, but you have to put yourself in Krishna's hands and respect his style of replying. When he wants to reply, how he wants to reply. You have to have implicit faith. He's unconditionally loving, always. No matter what he does not, he's always an ocean of mercy. So yes, we as students in our 50% of the equation, we should follow this example of Brahma as an inquirer, trying to seek Krishna, to make some effort in our part of our searching Krishna. Jignasu Shreya Uttamam, says the Bhagavatam. When describing the disciple, Jignasu Shreya Uttamam means disciple is very seriously inquiring for in the direction of the highest good, in the highest possible attainment. I only want that. I don't want anything less than the highest. Not because of pride, no? Try to understand, it's not like I only want the highest. No. But the highest has come to me in such a way that I cannot but just look after that now. I cannot just run, I have to run after that. Vedanta Sutra says that, Atato Brahma Jignasa. This word Jignasa is very important. To inquire. Atato means now. Many meanings to that sutra, to every sutra. So Atato means now. Now that you have human form of life, could be one meaning. You can ask why questions. If you are not a human, your question will never be why. Will be how. An animal is asking how. How to eat, how to survive, where to sleep. More survival, instinctual questions. But an animal will never ask why. That's a qualitative question, not quantitative. And we ask why. That we are humans. Why means existential crisis. Why? As children, we were, why? At one point, our parents would stop asking why. But that's what human life is about. A why, big why question. Why? So that's the meaning of human life. Atato Brahma Jignasa. You have now to ask why in connection to the Absolute. Inquire in the direction of the Absolute. And the Vedanta Sutra will say at one point, Shastra Yoni Tvat. Atato Brahma Jignasa Janmadiya Syajata Shastra Yoni Tvat. Inquire in the direction of the Absolute, who is he from whom everything comes. And Shastra is the womb from which the knowledge of the Absolute will come. And the Charyas have said, this knowledge you will hear from the sadhu, and you may have a question, and the sadhu will reply with knowledge, but you have to do something with that knowledge. It's like the sadhu in replying, it's like giving you an egg, and you have to put the egg, and you have to, like the birds, how do you say in English, what do they do with the bird? They sit on top of the bird, of the egg, and then I don't know the English word for that.
In English, I don't know.
Okay, but you know in German, in Italian, French.
Ausbrüten.
Okay, in Spanish it's incubar. Incubate, maybe in English, incubate? Okay.
Hatch.
Okay, thank you so much. So my point is, the egg is there, but still there is some processing for the whole thing to take birth officially, a dvija, not a second birth. So similarly, we receive the knowledge, but we have to do our part for that, for us to find the answer in the knowledge. We have a question to the guru, Sri Guru replies, but we will only be able to find the answer to our question in his words by we doing our part as disciples, student, by surrender, by prayer, and so on. So we need to inquire in the proper way. The very main character of the Bhagavatam is Parikshit Maharaj. And the very name Parikshit means the inquirer. Pari Ikshita. Ikshita means to look, to search. And Pari means all around, everywhere. So Parikshit saw Krishna in the womb. Interesting, we were speaking about wombs. Parikshit was in the womb. And Krishna appeared, long story, to protect him, of course, from Ashwatthama's Brahmastra. And imagine, you know, to have darshan of Krishna in the womb, not even after going out of the womb, but inside the womb. So he went out of the womb, and he just, the only question he had is, where is that person that I saw in the womb? So he started to examine every person he met outside the womb. Are you that person? No, are you that person? And therefore, he's known as Parikshit, which is also the examiner. Are you Krishna? Are you where is Krishna? Where is, no, in this way. So he personifies the spirit of inquiry. He's the Sravanakya Acharya of the Bhagavatam. Means he who attained perfection by hearing, which is part of our role as students, to learn to hear. He attained perfection just by hearing. As we said the other day, if you do it properly, if you just limit yourself to one anga of bhakti perfectly, you attain all perfection. So that's Parikshit. Very deep, very sincere inquirer. Even when he met his Gurudev, Sukadev Goswami, as we know, he was looking for his, for guru. And his guru appeared, but the guru appeared in a very, how to say, in a way that you generally do not think that your guru will appear. Some people have their idealization how the guru should be. No, he should be Indian, he should be old, he should have long beard, some nice turban here, ideally floating, some lights around, whatever. Many disciples, big temples, lots of money, who knows? Everyone has their own idea what's guru. None of those things are speaking about guru. But Parikshit Maharaj was looking for guru, and guru tattva appeared, walking, 16-year-old naked boy. Try to imagine. Parikshit Maharaj was the emperor of the world, a man with experience, elder than Sukadev, and now a boy came that could be his son, in age, naked, walking totally like in oblivion, totally disconnected from reality, apparently, followed by boys that were shouting and screaming, maybe throwing stones to him. Very unusual situation. There was no procession. Jai Gurudev, Jai, I'm putting garland and palanquin, but boys insulting him, throwing stones to him, and he walking naked without clothes, not even using a coping. He was so detached that he was not aware he didn't have a coping, basically. But Parikshit Maharaj could see all the way through all these formalities to see, oh, Gurudev is there. Guru Tattva has manifested. That's my guru. He didn't become stuck in all this relative stuff. And he surrendered. So he's showing the essential, the Saragrahi spirit of inquiry beyond forms. And of course, Sukadev Goswami is similarly essentialist, as Krishna Chandra was telling me the other day. When he finished speaking, Sukadev Goswami finished speaking Bhagavatam to Parikshit. He even didn't wait that Parikshit was beaten by Takshaka, by the snake. He finished his narrative, no more questions. Okay, Sukadeva Goswami woke up from the Vyasasana, walked into the forest, and disappeared. He was not waking, okay, Dakshina now, or whatever, some donation for the speaker, nothing. He just entered back into the forest, into another forest. No, he was transformed by his, by this narration. So, Vrindavan, that was the forest. He came from a forest, but he entered into a different forest after. So in this way, Brahma is pointing how seriously we should inquire after truth. Krishna himself, when he spoke with Brahma at the beginning of creation, he spoke Chatushloki Bhagavatam. There are four. There's Chatushloki Gita, the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, verses 8 to 11. There are four verses that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur framed Chatushloki, very nice. But we have also Chatushloki of the Bhagavatam. Indeed, some acharyas speak about two Chatushlokis, one pronounced by Britrasura, interestingly, in terms of Bhava, but one spoken by Krishna to Brahma, in terms of Tattva, in the ninth chapter of the second canto, verses 33 to 36. So the very last verse of this Chatushloki is very clear how Krishna is pointing to Brahma, the essential spirit of inquiry. Etavagiva jignasyam tatva jignasunatmanam ambaya vyatireka vyam jatsyat sarvatra sarvada. So for each one of these verses, we need a separate retreat in Anandadham. That's the problem of Harikatha, the problem of the blessing, if you will. So basically, Krishna is saying there to Brahma, a person who is searching for the absolute truth, really searching, not just like a hobby, but this is my job, if you will, not my weekend hobby, but this is my life breath. That person must look for the absolute truth in all circumstances, in all space, in all time, both directly and indirectly. Must be obsessed, basically. That's the level of inquiry.
Yes. That means indirect.
Indirectly? As we were speaking before, when I was here, one example could be, of course we can say many things about indirect speech and paroksha bhava, but as we were saying yesterday, and today in the summary of yesterday, one thing is what is reality, and another thing is what is not reality. No? So by speaking about what reality is not, I'm speaking indirectly about, no? I can say, Krishna Chandra Prabhu was not born in Brazil. Indirectly I'm saying something, but I can say he was born in Switzerland. That's more direct. But indirectly I'm negating things that do not connect to his physical appearance in this world, if you will. You follow my point, right?
Yes.
So, indirect and direct, maybe you say something positive, this is it, or indirect, this is not that. In another level, indirect will mean indirect speech, Vyanjanabriti and Parok Shabbat. There we start entering into more esoteric realms. No, when in the Lila, that's what we were saying yesterday, no? When something is being, we will see today also when we were shared our meditations at the end how Madhu Mangal, for example, he's joking with Krishna in front of Yashoda and using indirect speech and saying something that can have two meanings at the same time. So in the meaning for Yashoda means Krishna was playing with his friends. But the same words can mean Krishna was playing with his girlfriends. Yashoda has no ears for that. Because we mentioned she's the form Vatsalya Murti. But Krishna, when he hears Madhu Mangal, he's like sweating. Like, what are you saying? You're about to... No? But he realizes Yashoda is not catching that. She's not getting the indirect meaning. But by indirect meaning, there's lots of relish in rasa. So that's one of the codes of Rasa Shastra. It has to be spoken indirectly. That means paroksha bhava. Krishna in the Bhagavatam said, Paroksham mama cha priyam. I like Paroksha Bhat very much. No. When someone speaks indirectly about something, oh, that's so nice. Which means only if you have the eyes to hear, you will understand. If you don't got those ears, you will understand something in a more general level. But the most confidential meaning, you won't get them. Only if you are trained for that, you will... But the rest won't know. So that gives a special taste. Especially when we are speaking about something hidden, like Parakiya Bhava or things like this.
Divine love affairs.
Sorry?
Divine love affairs.
Exactly. Anyhow. So we have not yet started with any of the ancient commentaries of the Bhagavad. That's the risk of Harikatha. Lost and found in Harikatha. But we have time, right?
Yeah.
We have eternity.
Yes.
We have eternity on our side. So, okay. So let's continue then. Let's go with to Sridhar Swami's Bhavartha Deepika, his commentary. I have here. Thank you. Does the translator have water?
Huh? No, and he needs to go to the toilet.
Oh, I see. Sounds switching.
Anyway, better.
You will translate, Krishna?
We have already arranged that he will.
You have a big parade of translators here. You're very fortunate. I'm making one collapse after the other. But you have so many. So. When the last one collapsed, the first one is already recovered to go back. So we took turns. So Sridhar Swami, I'll share some words from Sridhar Swami's commentary. He says, someone may ask at this point, given that liberation is to be achieved only by jnana, why is bhakti emphasized? I mean, we are not saying that, but someone may say that. Liberate mukti is only attained by jnana. Why you emphasize bhakti? So Brahma replies to that in this verse, clarifying how bhakti is also required for attaining mukti. It's not that with jnana you can attain mukti. You need bhakti for that to happen also. Brahma implies here, and Sridhar Swami paraphrases Brahma. He kind of repeats part of the verse. O Lord, only a person favored by a fraction of the mercy of only one place on one of your lotus feet, such a person can know the truth about you. He's just speaking about not only the mercy of Krishna's feet, but the mercy of Krishna's one section of one of the two lotus feet. And one slight trace of that, that's powerful enough to know him. And of course this implies if someone wants to know Krishna as Nirvishesh Brahman, his impersonal feature, they will need that mercy also, basically. But ultimately, of course, Brahma is not after Brahma is not after Brahman. He's after Braja Krishna. So that's his point in the prayer. So Brahma concludes, according to Sridhar Swami, anyone else, apart from those who seek your feet, anyone else, even though seeking for a long time without taking shelter in bhakti, and even though engaging in constant neti-neti, which is this is Maya, they won't know the truth about your glory. So even if they're very capable, very discerning, they engage in this like differentiating between matter and spirit, but without bhakti, you will still be far away. Remember, Brahma is speaking all this with his own realization. He has just realized all the things a few minutes ago. Let's go to Srila Sanatan Goswami's commentary called Brihat Vaishnav Toshani. He says, although your glory is very obvious, he's paraphrasing Brahma again, although your glory is very obvious, nonetheless, it can only be realized as such by your mercy. So, in other words, you are so glorious that it's relatively easy to realize that. I mean, it's relatively easy to know about that. But to have full realization of that, that's not so easy. That we need your mercy. So one thing is to know, okay, Krishna is wonderful. On some level, to hear that, okay, theoretically you hear some things. But to live in those concepts, you hear a concept, but you have to live in the concept. You follow? These are not just concepts. These are places to reside eternally. If I tell you Krishna is beautiful, that may be an interesting concept. But that's not enough. You have to live in that concept. You have to enter and inhabit that concept eternally. All these concepts are to be inhabited by us. So Brahma is making that point. For that I need your mercy. Then he describes Sanatana Goswami, the word Deva, along the lines we already spoken a little bit more. He said, Deva can mean, he gives different options, O you who reveal everything. Because, again, Div had to do with effulgence and shining. So Krishna's self, I mean, he's self-effulgent. So you can only see him by his own effulgence or grace. Like you can only see the sun by the grace of the sun, basically. If you had lived in a cave and you never saw the sun, and I tell you, I will show you the sun today. But you never saw the sun. So everything you saw in your life till now in the cave was through candles. So I tell you, let's see the sun today. Okay, let me bring the candle, you will say. And I will start to laugh. No, you don't need a candle. And you will feel, are you cheating me? I need candle. To see everything, I need candle. No. Sun is another category altogether. But you cannot conceive that because you never saw the sun. So you keep your candle in your hands. I'll take my candle just in case. Okay, take your candle and drop your candle when you see the sun. So you'll take the candle and when you see the sun's light. Wow. You follow my point. So the sun is showing himself to you. So similarly, Krishna. You can see Krishna when Krishna is showing to you. You cannot deny, I'm seeing. And maybe when I take you to see the sun, you may tell me, and how do I know when we are looking at the sun? How know what's the sun? I'll tell you, you will know when we will see the sun. No need for me to confirm that. When the sun is there, you will know it's the sun. So similarly, when Krishna shows to you, you will know it's Krishna. There's no doubt that. Epiphany again. So Deva means that. You reveal yourself. Or you reveal everything. And you are everything. So you reveal yourself. Govinda Jaya Jaya.
Svapramanya.
Govinda Jaya Jaya. Govinda Jaya Jaya. Gopala Jaya Jaya. Yeah. Self-confirmed. Self-revealed. Krishna self-manifest. There you have it. So this was Brahma's experience just a few minutes ago. Remember, Krishna showed himself in such a way. Narayana is coming from him being the origin of everything. Some minutes ago, he didn't seem to be that, but when he wanted to show that to Brahma, no doubt whatsoever. And Sanatana Goswami concludes, of course, Deva also can mean, O you who always play in Vrindavan. So, the other meanings, you who reveal everything, Deva, means what Brahma experienced till now. But now when he says, Deva, you who play in Vrindavan, always means Nitya Lila. Always play means Nitya Lila. So Brahma is pointing, I have not experienced that yet, I've not entered Nitya Lila, but I want to enter there. So the same word Deva can illustrate what Brahma experienced till now so far, and what Brahma will like to experience from now on. I'd like to join your cowherd group, basically. So here we see, in this verse still, Brahma is not saying clearly, I want Braj and all that, but the implications of these words are pointing to that. Deva, you play eternally in Vrindavan, I want to play eternally with you there. If you play out the implications of the word, indirectly, he's saying that here. Again, indirect and direct. Ambaya vitirekavya. Then Sanatan Goswami says, goes to the word mahimna, which sometimes means like greatness or glory. Maha, maha means big. So mahimna, mahimma, mahatmya, different similar words. Sorry?
Mahamantra.
Mahamantra, mahabhagavat, maha so many, mahaprasad. Great, greatness. So the word mahimna, Sanatan Goswami says, apart from referring to Krishna's glories, also can mean, can refer to the glories of bhakti. He says, when you start the practice of bhakti, you start bhakti, you pray for bhakti continuously, you will know the mahimna of bhakti, the glory of bhakti. Bhakti Devi ki jai. And the contrast, of course, is, and Sanatana Goswami says, another person who is not behaving like that, all by himself, all alone, without association, no matter how exalted that person is, if he or she engages in contemplation and studies his shastra and practices yoga, that person won't know the glories of bhakti. Krishna bhakti janmamul hoi sadhu sangha, Krishna prem janmeten ho punarmukhya anga. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, sadhu sangha is the root cause that gives birth to bhakti. And even when you attain prem, sadhu sangha remains mukhya anga, the main aspect of your life. That's important. It's not that we are only having sadhu sangha here, so we can go someday to Golok, and in Golok, no more sadhu sangha, no need of that. We are in Golok. In Golok, you will have more sadhu sangha. The closer you get to the goal, the more sadhu sangha you have. So that's the uniqueness of bhakti. In other processes, for example, in karma, you engage in karma, and the more you get closer to the goal of karma, the more you reduce your practices. And you get to Swarga and enjoy heavenly delights there. Or if you practice Gyan, the closer you get to Brahman, at one point you leave all this Gyan sadhana to merge, if you will. You follow? Your sadhana diminishes the closer you get to the goal. Same with yoga, reaching samadhi. But bhakti is different. The more you practice bhakti, means the more you get closer to your goal in bhakti, the more bhakti increases. Because the practice of bhakti is not different from the goal of bhakti in one sense. So we don't need to diminish anything. We just need to increase everything. That's the difference, basically, between bhakti and every other process. And that shows how bhakti is the supreme process. Because if you diminish bhakti to attain something else, then that something else is higher than bhakti. But there's nothing higher than bhakti. So there's no need to diminish bhakti. There's only need to increase bhakti. Sanatana Goswami concludes saying, although one realizes this truth about the glory of bhakti, by getting Krishna's full mercy, the word lesha. Sorry, I lost it. Thank you. Here, lesha, which means only a trace. The word lesha is used with the intention of expressing that this mercy is hard to obtain. In other words, it's not that Krishna doesn't want to give mercy, but we have to have the desire to receive that mercy also. There is a price to pay.
What is the price?
Krishna bhakti rasa bhavitamati kriyadam dati kuto pilavyate tatra laulya mapye kalam molyam janma koti sukritaru nalavyate. Is that a good answer, Krishna Chandra Prabhu? Yeah? Okay. That's a price to pay, basically. Rupa Goswami is saying to reach this Krishna bhakti rasa, this experience, the ultimate experience. Interestingly, Srila Prabhupada said, I name my movement Krishna consciousness inspired on this verse, which speaks about bhakti rasa and the price to pay to get it. So if you want to have your mati, your intelligence, your inner world, like, how do you say, like, infused, surcharged in Krishna bhakti rasa, drenched in that, tatra laule mapi kalam mulyam janma koti sukritarlan labhyate. If you even for hundreds of births perform mundane piety, nothing happens. This won't come. So what to do? What's the price? Tatra laulyam api ekalam mulyam. The only price is to be paid in coins of sacred greed. So that's an important point. Before asking how much should I pay, first, you have to ask, what's the currency? You follow? Because you may say, how much do I have to pay? No, first you have to know, what's the currency? Because you may not have the currency. You may have to go to a house, that haunted place, but they change the currency. And the coins will be greed coins. No? The coins are to pay laulyam or lobha, which means greed. We know what's greed here. So no matter, I want to obtain the object of my greed, I don't care for anything till I get there. I'm sure you studied that recently in your Raghavarma Chandrika. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives this nice example of the milk sweet that someone wants. And someone wants a milk sweet, and the person is greedy for that. And the person asks, what do I have to do to have this, whatever, rasa gula? And say, well, you need milk first. Okay. So for getting milk, I need a cow. Okay. So you get the cow. So now you have to milk the cow. Of course, probably the cow will need to have a calf first. And you have to have grass. So many things in place. But you want your rasa gula. So you will get the calf, the cow, the grass, all the things that seem somehow disconnected from the rasa gula. But in your mind, you have, I want that. So I will do all that I have to do so I get that. So you get the cow, you milk the cow, you get the milk. Now, of course, the milk has to be processed in so many ways. And eventually, you make the preparation, you have the rasa gula. So you follow all these rules and regulations, the cow, the man, but your only idea was, I'm greedy for rasa gula. You follow. So sometimes the devotee may be apparently doing something which seems mundane or whatever, but you have to pay close attention. What's your inner motivation for that? Externally seems something, but internally you may be full of greed. That's the instruction that Mahaprabhu gave to the Goswamis. No? Parakya instructions. No? You still have to remain working in the government. You have to engage in the world. Okay, no problem. It's not the moment for you to join me. So just act as a woman who has a lover. secret lover, Parakia. So she will be at home and she will do all the household duties better than ever. So nobody suspects what's going on. So husband, mother-in-law, everyone will be so happy as we have such a nice wife here. She's doing, she likes so much to, but in your mind, you're just thinking about your lover. So anyhow, some examples concerning the price to pay. The currency first, and then how much of that. Okay, we continue. We have some time? Yeah. So that's a currency, just for you to know. Greed, loba. Again, it's a whole separate series of lectures on that topic. With all this, we already have in mind like three more series of lectures for 3 more years visiting Anandam or something. Let's go to Jiva Goswami's commentary. Lagu Vaishnava Toshani. He says, even a person of good discernment can approach you only by your grace. So again, the same point. No matter how virtuous you are on an intellectual level, material level, Krishna is way beyond all the things. Beyond the gunas, beyond sattva, beyond everything. Then Jiva Goswami will, for a minute, smash Advaitavat. Smash, if you will. Show it clearly, the contrast of it with bhakti. So he says, in previous sections, Advaitavad was, exposed. The inferiority of the impersonal attainment was contrasted with the glory of your feet. And Jiva Goswami said, because of the word Padambuja, which means lotus feet, bhakti is implied in this verse. Like implying a follower of Sankaracharya won't speak about lotus feet. There are no lotus feet in Brahman. Brahman has no feet. Brahman has no legs, have no qualities. Nirvishesh, nirgun Brahman. Then he says, the idea that a person can be favored by your mercy, by the Krishna's mercy. This is hinting at a famous Shruti statement. So Jiva Goswami will quote a famous line that comes both in the Katha Upanishad as well as in the Mundaka Upanishad. Jam ibaisha brinute tena labhyas. First line. Jam ibaisha brinute tena labhyas. Which basically means he can be attained by so he can only be attained by one whom he chooses. No? He means Krishna. Krishna can be attained by those who Krishna chooses to reveal himself to them. If not, that's not happening. If you try only by yourself, there's no way.
So also no prayer is serving.
No what?
No prayer.
Prayer?
So if you say it depends only from him.
Yeah.
So it's not necessary that I pray, please reveal yourself.
Yeah, it's necessary.
It's necessary.
Yeah.
But then he decides when.
Yes.
Okay.
Because he wants to become inclined to such a thing. He's not forced, but... He wants to go to such a soul.
Yeah. He wants us to put our voluntary... I mean, it's love is reciprocal dealing also, no? So he wants us to choose him. No? He doesn't want to impose himself on us. He also wants to see us wanting him. Because it's two-way street. Love is two-way street. I mean, there are many ways of explaining the idea. But basically also, yeah, Krishna is waiting for us to voluntarily give ourselves to him, not by force of circumstance. but by I choose, I take responsibility for my choice, and I want this.
But he knows everything.
Not Krishna. Krishna is, I remember, he's bored with his omniscience. If you will. So what does it mean that he knows everything? What do you imply by that?
He knows what is in my heart.
Mm-hmm. So, what is in your heart?
Yeah, I have to express it. Yeah.
So that's the point. Yeah, of course, he knows everything, but the question is, what's in my heart? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And to not only say it, but of course, walk the talk, as they say in English. No? Because also we can say so many things. And Krishna will say, oh, you say that, okay. I've seen the devotees saying, praying, Krishna, give me your mercy. And Krishna said, okay. And he, whatever, some particular arrangement goes to the life of that devotee. Exactly, yeah. Tadhanam Harishit, yeah. Harishit Tadhanam Shanai. So this one famous verse of the Bhagavatam that Krishna Chandrabhu quote, that Krishna said, to that people, to those devotees whom I want to show my mercy, he already gave the translation. Yeah. I could feel. Yeah.
You can watch your words.
No, I didn't
No? Okay. Yeah. It was creating the emotional background. The tone seemed like that he said the second line, but not only the first one.
Yeah.
To those devotees then that I want to give my full mercy. Harishit tad dhanam shanai. I gradually, he said, deprive them from all their wealth. Mm-hmm. I take away everything from them. Of course, we need to understand this verse, no? So we are not afraid and we change our path. We call the helicopter, take me away, take me out from here. Of course, all my wealth also can mean all the things that I think are wealth, are artha, are. But real wealth, real artha is paramartha, or panchama purusartha. That's prem, that's real wealth. But even Krishna is saying shanai. Shanai means gradually. So I do it in a way that is sustainable. Even though we may feel, last time it didn't feel sustainable, it felt quite intense, Krishna. But Krishna will say, but you pray asking for my mercy. And sometimes that's the funny thing. We say, Krishna, give me your mercy. You say, okay, mercy comes. And we start to pray him again, telling Krishna, give me your mercy. This situation is coming. And Krishna will say, that was my mercy. That was my mercy, and now you are praying for more mercy, so you escape from my mercy. So in the beginning, we are not very expert in our prayers. We don't have a very clear idea what's mercy. Mm-hmm. Or we think we have an idea. No? So when we pray to Krishna, say, give me your mercy, but we already know how that mercy should come. And Krishna would say, if you know everything so nicely, you don't need me, basically, Krishna said. But if you really want my mercy, you have to be open to what do I think is my mercy for you. You have to be accepted of that. That means to open our heart regarding your question the other day. When you say, Krishna, give me your mercy, I have to have this conversation. You know better than me what's the mercy I need in this stage in my life. I don't know. I may think I know, but so I'm open to receive that mercy. Tatenu kampansu samikha and so on. Brahma prayed like this in the beginning of this series. He who is seriously looking, earnestly looking for your mercy, that person will be tolerate all the things that come to their life as a result of their past activities. And not only tolerate, but hit bhatva purbir bidadan namaste jivita yamukti padesadaiva. And with their body, words, and mind, those people will be constantly glorifying you. not only tolerating, because sometimes tolerating is, okay, I have to tolerate. And you're like, okay, I have to tolerate. But Brahma is showing another level of tolerance here. You are glorifying Krishna. Not tolerating. These things come, but you are glorifying Krishna. Why? Srila Siddhartha Maharaj will say, because the devotee at that situation will feel, according to my past misdeeds, I should be receiving this amount of reaction. But Krishna is so merciful that I'm receiving this, smaller. So instead of thinking, I have to tolerate this, I will conclude, he's so merciful. And I celebrate that. I will be grateful for his mercy. So again, change your angle of vision, as Srila Siddhartha Maharaj told us the other day. You choose how to react. You choose to lament and to play the victim. Oh, why is this happening to me? This is too much. This shouldn't be happening. Srila Siddhartha Maharaj will say, explaining this verse that I'm quoting, whatever is happening to you is the best possible thing that could be happening to you. He's not saying whatever is happening to you happens for some reason. He's saying that's the best possible thing that could be happening to you. And it's embarrassing because we may feel, oh, but I'm feeling this is the worst possible thing that could be happening to me now. So the point is, can I change the situation? No. So, change yourself. And that's Krishna's mercy. Krishna is sending that situation, so you change yourself.
For some, that's very difficult. You know, like, if you ask this as a devotee to your Gurudev and you get this answer, then you might... Yeah, you know, understand this answer, understand what he means.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much suffering outside, there's so much violence outside. I mean, we are here now in a sacred place,
mm-hmm.
you know, with
mm-hmm.
all of us together.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much sadness and violence. So for every single person, for every single child who's, you know, suffering
yeah.
on this planet,
yeah.
it's the best option at this moment. I mean, also there is like... you know, a way of like change the thinking, like you
mm-hmm,
know
mm-hmm.
this attitude.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very difficult without a God consciousness and without trusting in God, right?
Totally agree. And of course, by saying this, we are not promoting indifference. No, we have to be compassionate. But compassion doesn't mean, how to say, that you become depressed or discouraged by seeing the suffering in the world. Like my Guru Maharaj will say, and again, this is another orientation, we think there are problems in the world. And my Guru Maharaj said, no, actually, the world is a problem. And I'm using the word problem like when you use the word problem like in mathematics. You have a mathematical problem, right? That needs to be solved. Well, it's something that is inviting you to solve it. So the world is a problem that needs to be solved. And this won't change just by, okay, we have to change the world. I have to change myself. That's more difficult. That's not easier. That's more difficult. Many people try to change the world as an escape for changing themselves. I'm not condemning anyone. I'm just making a point. Even as devotees, we can do that. Let's go and preach and save the whole world and give Krishna bhakti. But how saved I am? How I'm using compassion as an excuse to not do my own inner work. You follow my point?
Yes.
Gandhi say that. See this, be the change you want to see in the world. Easier said than done. Of course, it doesn't mean that if you are walking on the path and there is someone suffering, I have to work on myself. No, I don't care. No. He has to work on himself. That's his karma. We are not saying that. No, we are not saying that. But yeah, we are trying to go to the very root of the whole thing. No, and there's only one problem if we want to be reductionist. The only problem is anadi avidya. Avidya, which is basically ignorance. There are not more problems. Wars are not a problem. Drugs are not problems. Violence is not a problem. What do I mean by this? All of these are byproducts and symptoms of the problem. But generally, most of the people is trying to relieve the symptoms and not go to the root cause of all problems. So the problem is that the problem is still coming. You solve a little part here, but a new one comes here and a new one comes here, because you are not going to the root. So that's why the Bhagavatam gives this famous root example of watering the root of the tree. No? Paying attention to the root cause of everything, and not put water on one leaf, another leaf, one branch. You will kill the tree by doing that. Although it sounds, no, I'm being compassionate with every. Go to the root. That's the best way of being compassionate.
All the leaves will be nourished.
Or when you eat, that's the second example the Bhagavatam gives. When you eat, what do you do with prasad? You try to honor prasad through your ears?
No.
You try to put the samosa here? That won't work. I don't recommend it.
Yeah. No?
Only one hole can receive prasad, and not this one either, but here. And all the food goes to the stomach, and the stomach is taking everything. So it may sound, wow, the stomach is so selfish. Everything for the stomach. Why everything? Why Krishna may seem similar? What everything for Krishna? Krishna is like the stomach. But what's the stomach doing? All for the stomach, but then processing and distributing everything to every single organ and direction, and not taking anything for himself at the end. Serving everyone else. Receiving everything to serve everyone. So that's Krishna also. All goes to him, but at the end, if you pay attention, he's just a devotee of his devotees. That's the definition of Bhagavan in the Bhagavatam. That's another one, yeah. I mean, there are many. But there's one line which says, Bhagavan Bhakta Bhaktimam. Which means, who is Bhagavan? He's the Bhakta of his Bhaktas. He's the devotee of his devotees. That's our Bhagavan. That's the God we worship. The God we worship is a God who worships his devotees. And of course, Aham Bhakta Paradino, and so many verses, 6 verses in a row there, one more beautiful than the other. No, Sada Bhari Dayamma, all of them. Try to learn them by heart. If you want some hearty advice, 9th canto of the Bhagavatam, I think 4th chapter, verses 68 till 6 verses. Very beautiful meditation. 63, okay. Aham Bhakta Paradino, and from that onwards. Very beautiful verses. We have given a series of lectures on that some years ago. That was like, it was an anxiety to finish a verse because there was no end to that, no? Okay, I have to go to the second verse. Okay, let's go. Anyhow, so some words in connection to the commentary. Still, we have eternity on our side to continue speaking. Okay. Just testing the audience. If someone says Maharaj is too late, I'm hungry, then we will continue. But you didn't pass the test.
Everybody's hungry.
Yeah. That's what Sukadev said to Parikshit at one point, interestingly. In one point in the Bhagavatam, Sukadev Goswami is testing the student. Remember, Pariksit was 7 days without food, drink, rest. So maybe when he was like half of the week, Pariksit Sukadev kind of says, okay, I think we spoke quite a lot already. So you must be tired, hungry, 3 days without sleeping and eating. So Pariksit had the golden opportunity to say, yes, Gurudev, give me a break. But he felt, Gurudev is testing me. And Pariksit Maharaj said, actually, you tell that I've been fasting for all these days, but I'm having a royal feast for the last 3-4 days. You are feeding me Harikata up to the neck. Akanta, up to the neck, I'm filled. So this is, your kata is my water, your kata is my food, your kata is my rest, your kata. So, I mean, I think I'm eating too much, but I want more even. No? That's what the Bhagavatam say, bhakti parishanu bhav virakti ranjatra chaitra ekka kala prapadya manasya jatasnata sustushti pusti kshurapayonu gasham. In the 11th canto, this is being said. These three symptoms. Bhakti parishanu bhavi raktir. Devotion, realization of Bhagavan, and detachment from all that is not him. All these three will appear simultaneously in someone who is practicing. In the same way, as someone who is eating will experience tusti pusti kshudapayo nugasham, which means someone hungry will feel three things simultaneously. Will relish the taste of the food, will feel strength and nourished by the food, and will feel that hunger is eradicated. The three things happen at the same time. So similarly happens for someone practicing bhakti. But our commentators will say, this is a nice analogy, but there's one failure in the analogy, which is, you are eating, and there's a point that you say, I'm no longer hungry, I cannot eat anymore. This doesn't happen with bhakti. The more you eat, the more hungry you are. So there you are, all of you are the personification of this verse of the Bhagavatam, asking for more. So let's continue. Jiva Goswami explains the word Bhagavan. We already spoke a lot about the name Deva, but we didn't say too much about the name Bhagavan. I mean, I say something now, Bhagavan Bhakti Bhakta Bhakti Ma, which is a lot. But Jiva Goswami says, Bhagavan here refers to he who is dedicated to manifest his qualities, which is one of the qualities of Bhagavan, compassion. And remember, Brahma, what is he saying in this verse? Only by your compassion one can know you. And you are Bhagavan, he who shows compassion. And Brahma is saying, that's how I can know you now, because you are Bhagavan, you have shown your grace to me. And he concludes, Jiva Goswami, saying, the word lesha, let's go again to the word lesha, is used to express that although Krishna's mercy may be only one particle in the beginning, and that may be a lot for us in the beginning, that initial little mercy, it will gradually increase until there is full attainment of that. So that's again to give hope to the sadhakas. No? Krishna's already giving mercy. And the more you embrace that mercy, more mercy will come. And there is no limit to that. Again. And then Jiva Goswami says, in his Krama Sandarbha, it's another commentary on the Bhagavatam, he wrote like 3 commentaries on the Bhagavatam. Try to imagine that. For some devotees, it's too much to read the Bhagavatam, to finish the whole thing. He was writing one commentary, he felt, Oh, this is not enough. Let's write another commentary in the Bible. Second commentary. This is not enough. Another commentary. He was writing other books, all of them revolving around the Bhagavatam. So, in one sense, all of the books of the Goswamis are commentaries on the Bhagavatam, basically. So he says in Krama Sandarbha, one of these commentaries, by this mercy that is speaking in this verse about, we spoke about, one can know the truth about your greatness, your mahimna. And this greatness of you is a combination of power and sweetness. Aishwarya, Madhurya. The two combined make for your greatness. Because sometimes we think greatness means Aishwarya only. Well, you're so great. But the real greatness is Krishna's sweetness. But you need Aishwarya in the background so that Madhurya is happening, as we already explained. You understand this idea? You cannot have Madhurya without Aishwarya. Do you remember this point from Raghavarma Chandrika? Ishodhyan remembers that. You can explain it briefly?
I remember, but I
there is a prize to reply to my question. So one example we can give is, for example, there is a baby here, and a baby will be charming for everyone. But Krishna as a baby is especially charming. Why?
Because he's so great and all-knowing and all-powerful, and he's taking up this sweet role of a little baby. It's a million times more sweet than just a baby who is just a baby.
Just a baby who is not God, basically.
Right.
So Krishna is this great personality who can destroy universes with a glance, and despite that, he's just a baby. So you follow, the Aishwarya, the greatness, the godhood of him, is what makes him especially charming when he appears as a baby, or as a lover of Radha, or as a friend of Sridhar. So the Aishwarya is what allows the experience of Madhurya to happen. So that's why Jiva Goswami say here, your greatness is a combination of power and sweetness. There's, if you only have sweetness without power, that's ordinary sweetness, if you will. So, and then Jiva Goswami says, the result of mercy is knowledge in relation to Krishna. Krishna gives mercy. You get to know him. And the result of knowledge is worship. When you know Krishna, upasana. You engage in worshipping him. And the result of worship, Jiva Goswami says, sakshatkara, direct realization of Krishna. You see Krishna at one point. And of course, all this is what Brahma has gone through. He's having Krishna in front of him now. He's having direct darshan. But it all began with Krishna's mercy. No. Mercy, knowledge, worship, and sakshat darshan. So Brahma is going through all this. Let's conclude with Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur's brief commentary, which likely will be in a different direction, which also is interesting. He says, he's paraphrasing Brahman. He said, Brahma prayed in the following way. Only by Krishna Bhakti is it possible for the living entity who has discarded his material coverings to realize the bliss of Brahman. We made that point before. Even if you want Brahman, you need Bhakti. Being blessed with a particle of mercy from your feet, that person can understand the greatness of your personality. So now Bishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives two possibilities. He goes to this word prasada lesh. Prasada means mercy, and lesh means like slight trace of that. So he says, prasada lesh refers to the bhakti yoga of the jnanis. A jnani who is practicing jnana but is resorting to bhakti as a assistant practice so they can obtain mukti. So he says, Bhagavan will give the mercy of bhakti to that jnani. But in this case, the mercy will be such that the jnani will accept pure bhakti, will be converted to bhakti. Won't only take bhakti for mukti, but just, oh, well, this is bhakti, I stay here. And the second... And the second option that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives says, however, one who gives up bhakti in preference to jnana and kind of enthusiastically pursues Brahman, runs after Brahman, although he may be a guru for thousands of jnanis, such a person will never know the truth about the glory of Bhagavan. So he will say, for those who resort to bhakti just as an assistant for mukti, as a means for Brahman, they receive some grace that allows them to get there. But in Brahma's estimation, that's, he called it prasad less. We can call it also in English, prasad less. Less prasad. Not so much mercy in that case. They just want Brahman. So they don't want you. That's not okay, so not so much mercy is required for that. Prasad less. But Brahma is after prasad most, no? In this connection there is one verse in the Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami in second canto, he's saying Vidura Kashtaya Muhu Kujogi Nam. He refers to a Kuyogi, which is like a false yogi. He offers pranam to Krishna and says, oh, pranam to you, Bhagavan, whose position is very far away from the false yogis. Like implying those who only want mukti, they want mukti, they don't want you. They want mukti. So they are not real yogis. Real yogis, bhakti yogi. That's what Krishna says in the Gita. Yogi nama pisardisam mad gatinantaratmana shradhavam bhajati jumam same yuktatamo mataha. Here we have Yogeshwar speaking. Sometimes Krishna is called Yogeshwareshwar, just in case. So he's the master of all yoga. Like he said, in my opinion, the greatest yogi is he who worships me with full heart, my devotee. That's the conclusive statement at the end of the yogic section of the Gita, 6th chapter, last verse, 47th verse.
I have a question for me. What if somebody attained mukti and then he decided to attain Bhagavan when he's got Brahman, but he then later realizes he wants to attain Bhagavan? So is there mercy for that as well, or how does that happen? Does it happen or at all? Or...
That's a good, that part which should have been in the beginning of the question, yeah. So, technically speaking, of course, when I say mukti, when we have been saying mukti in this class, we're referring to one of five types of mukti. Generally defined. There are four who are devotional types of mukti. And there's one mukti that is, we call it non-devotional. We are not interested in any of the five, interestingly, even in the devotional ones. Salokya, Samipya, Sarshti, and Sarupya are the devotional types of mukti, and Ekatvam or Sayujya is the non-devotional type of mukti. So, what does this mean? Briefly, because all this again, each question is a separate lecture minimum. And then you are getting to know me and you are realizing that I have no problem with opening my mouth. So I have to... How to know when to close my mouth? Because I also have to enter there and sit and practice and put in practice all that I'm telling you here. No, because it's easy. It's relatively easy to sit here and open the mouth. My Guru Maharaj always tells me that it's easy to sit and speak. It's not so easy to sit and practice. So better if you speak a lot, you also have to practice a lot to balance your open mouth. No? So, Sayuja, or the non-devotional mukti, is the one we spoke, this merging in Brahman, impersonal liberation. That bhaktas are not interested in that. As we say yesterday, kaivalyam narakayate. For devotees, this is like hell. Because a devotee wants to love Krishna, and in Brahman, there is nobody. There's no sense of individuality in Brahman. There is nobody. There's no sense of I, you, Brahman. There's only Brahman. So there's no interaction. There's nobody to relate to. And for a devotee, that's everything. To love Krishna. But that's an aspect of the Absolute. Brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate, says the Bhagavatam. One of the three features of the Absolute is Brahman. There is that possibility is there. We are not interested in that. But that's there. It's possible. And if you go there, and I know that some devotees may have a different opinion than me, it's not my opinion. This is what Shastra says. Nobody falls from Brahman. Nobody comes from there. And if you reach there, nobody returns from there either. Because Brahman is nirgun Brahman. Nirgun means there is no influence of the gunas. And the gunas are what Maya Shakti is made of. So if there is no Maya Shakti there, how can you fall from there? What can make you fall? Do you follow my point? Now, sometimes there is this worse idea that you fell from Vaikuntha, from Golok Vrindavan. First time I heard that, I almost had a heart attack. How can you fall from the spiritual world? What can make you fall from there? The only influence there is Swarup Shakti. How can Maya like find a place to enter and make you be envious of the gopis and be here? I mean, with all respect, that's not correct. But then you have four other types of muktis, which are mostly connected with Vaikuntha. Salokya, to reside in the same planet as Narayan. Some people want that. I want to reside in the same planet as God. Not even as a close associate. Just in the same planet. It's like if you are here and he's on the other side of the mountain and you almost never see him. But you are in his planet. That's cool, as they say in the United States. That's cool to be in God's planet. Some people want that. Again, we are not interested in that. But that's one possibility in Vaikuntha. Salokya, Sarsti, to have the opulence that Narayan has, Lakshmipati Narayan. Sarupya, to have a form similar to that of Narayan. Two extra arms. You don't seem interested in that. You are Gaudiya. You are biased by the influence of your parampara. But I can tell you, there's people who are really investing themselves in that direction. And there is place for that. Again, we should be careful not to criticize that. When Gopakumar went to Vaikuntha, he appreciated that. He said, this is beautiful. But also he felt, but this is not my place. But he saw they have prem, they have love for Bhagavan. So how can you criticize someone who has prem? I mean, prem is glorious. But it's not the type of prem he was interested in. To say, when Gopakumar saw Narayan in Vaikuntha, he shouted, Gopal! He just ran after Narayan. He wanted to embrace him. Like a friend. Because Gopakumar It's a Priyanarma Sakha, interestingly. That's an important point. For those who say there's no Sakya Rasa in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, Brihat Bhagavatamrita is the very first book written in the Gaudiya Sampradaya. And the main character there is a Priyanarma Sakha. Who also, of course, establishes the glory supremacy of the gopis. But he's there showing his example. So he goes and he tries to embrace Narayan in Vaikuntha. And nobody ever thinks of embracing Narayan in Vaikuntha. try to enter into Vaikuntha for a minute. No, Narayan is God. So you are supposed to worship God, not to embrace him. Some distance has to be there. There's prem, but it's like an Aishwaric prem. I worship God because he's God. He's supposed to be loved because love, God is to be loved. But Gopa Kumar had another samskaras. He saw Gopal. He saw a friend. He ran to embrace his friend. And everyone in Vaikuntha was, for the first time in history, in anxiety. Do you know what's the meaning of the word Vaikuntha? Vaikuntha means without anxiety.
Yeah.
For first time, Vaikuntha became Sakunta, full of anxiety. Everyone was like alarmed. Who is this newcomer who wants to embrace Narayana? They jumped on him. Stop there. No, you cannot do that. So Gopa Kumar felt like, this is not my place then. If it's a place that I cannot embrace him, this is not my place. He didn't ever criticize anyone. He just felt this. No, I have to continue my journey. Of course, he eventually found his place. Now there's a happy end to the story. But my point is, there are some people who want this type of things. No? Salokya, Sarupya, Sarsti, and Samipya. Missing that one, which is to serve God as a close associate. That's a little bit higher, if you will. You're serving Vishnu in Vaikuntha, but as a personal servant. But in Vaikuntha, in certain mood, Aishwarya. So, just an introductory clarification to your question regarding mukti, because all these are muktis. Now, your question, I imagine, goes mostly to the idea of impersonal liberation, right? You were asking about that?
Yeah, so how would they obtain... Yeah,
so the reply to the question... I mean, the reply will be shorter than my introduction. if you attain Brahman, you attain that and there's no sense of individuality anymore.
Yeah.
You remain there forever. So there's no other, movement there. You're just there. It's difficult to put even into words. Because if you tell me, what's the experience in Brahman? Strictly speaking, there is no experience. Because for you to have an experience, you have to have an experiencer and something which is experienced. But that doesn't exist in Brahman. In Brahman, there's only Brahman. All of you seem scared by hearing my description of Brahman. Kaivalyam narakayate. So I'm not promoting you going there, just in case. I'm just describing. Some people have some scars for that. For us, maybe surprising. There's people who is engaging in so much tapasya and effort to get there. They're making more effort than us. For such a goal that we say, no, thank you.
Then they couldn't attain Bhagavan ever. Is that what it is?
Sorry?
They couldn't attain Bhagavan ever then.
They couldn't attain Bhagavan?
Yeah.
No, but they don't want. That's the point.
Okay.
They choose to enter Brahman, and that's their choice, and there is place for that in eternity. Because Brahman is one aspect of Bhagavan. So it's one aspect of the Absolute. So they reside there forever because that's what they wanted. It's not that they are lamenting for that. There's nobody, there's no sense of lamentation because there's nobody to be lamenting. There's no sense of individuality. So they reach there and they stay there forever.
So there's no will to come back.
Exactly. You cannot come back because there's nothing that will make you come back because there is no you. I mean, you still are an individual soul, according to our vision.
Yeah.
You are individual, but your individuality is not operative. It's not expressing itself.
This is death.
Sometimes our churches have called that spiritual suicide. Again, we will say that because all of you are saying that and you are making all those faces you are making. I'm seeing your faces because you have received bhakti samskars. And you have a glimpse of Krishna, love, personal, the importance of remaining an individual and so on. But if I will be with an audience of Advaita Vadis or Jnanis, I will be speaking about Brahman and they will be in ecstasy. Relishing that, celebrating that. That's the all in all for them. And again, it's okay. I mean, we are not to condemn them. Our acharya have sometimes spoken strongly about that, but from a particular perspective of knowing bhakti, so by comparison, that's like abominable, if you will, or insignificant and all the things. But it's not that we have to go on a campaign and demonize the Advaita Vadis or anything like that. No? So basically that would be the idea. So I hope this is giving further negative impetus to tread the path of bhakti. No? Indirectly you become more inspired. I want to be devoted forever. Some hands raising.
As you explained right now, this impersonal being with in the Brahma, really, why is then bhakti required to get there? Because bhakti is very personal, isn't it?
Yeah.
It needs a you. It is, and it also is not just happening by accident. It's also part of his race.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and it cannot be destroyed or anything. It is a personal interaction.
Yeah.
So why is it needed?
I get the point. The attainment of Brahman, as I mentioned before, is nirgun. Nirgun means beyond the modes. So to finally attain that which is beyond the modes, you need something which is beyond the modes to take you there. And Gyan, which is the path of the Gyanis, Gyan or knowledge, Kaivalyam Sattvam, says the Bhagavatam. Kaivalyam Gyanam Sattvam. This Gyan is in Sattvagun. It's not Nirgun. The knowledge by which you can understand the difference between matter and spirit and this type of thing, that's Sattvic. Sattva. That's not transcendental. So for you to gain full entrance into Brahman, Gyan is not enough. Because Gyan is Sattvic. So you need something that which is beyond Sattva. And that's Bhakti. So the Gyanis will take Bhakti, take the Nirgun influence to attain that particular section of the Nirgun. So, in one sense, there is some bhakti in them. There are degrees of bhakti. And we can say, which bhakti, what bhakti is there? Again, they are taking bhakti as an assistant for reaching their goal. So some bhakti comes to their life. It's like bhakti, as we say, prasad less. Less prasad, not too much, but enough as to allow them to transcend the gunas and reach Brahman. And Brahman is one aspect of the Absolute. So they are residing, from our perspective, again, we have a different philosophy than those who pursue that goal, but we will say, to reside in Brahman for eternity means to reside in one aspect of the Absolute. although we may not speak about loving relationship, in one sense you are residing in one aspect of the Absolute forever. So in that sense you can speak of some type of relationship, if you want to speak like that, in a very slight way. And for that very slight relationship, very slight type of mercy is required, very slight bhakti is there. Again, the gyanis won't think like that. No? Gyanis will say, actually only Brahman is real. Brahma satya jagan mitya. Everything itself is false. The notion of Krishna, of Narayan, all this is maya. Only Brahman is real. The individuality of the soul, that's not real. Of course, we don't agree with them. We agree. It's a long topic. that's not that verse. What's this verse? 10th canto, 2nd chapter, which speaks about the Bimukta Manina. Vindaksha Bimukta Manina. Dinyera Ramindaksha Bimukta Manina. Buddhaya Aruhya Krichina Parampadantata. Do Ado Nadrita Jus Madangraya. If you forget the verse, I have someone else, and between the two, we can complete. So that verse is saying about, is speaking about those who bimukta manina, who consider themselves liberated, but who fall from that imagined condition of liberation. So some people may think, "Oh, this verse proves that you can fall from Brahman." No, because the verse says bimukta manina. You think yourself are liberated, but you are actually not liberated. So you are still here on this body. You are a jnani who want to enter Brahman, but you attain a very advanced stage of that. But at one point you offend bhakti, and by offending bhakti, you fall from whatever position you are in. So what do I mean by offending bhakti? Sometimes you have heard this expression, mayavadi, which is a little bit derogatory. And also sometimes a difference is made with the term brahmavadi. So brahmavadis could be, if we want to describe them like this, they are the ones who want to tame Brahman, but they will accept Bhagavan is real. Krishna's form is eternal. But I want to tame Brahman. You follow? They do not say the Krishna's form is illusory, everything is maya except for Brahman. There are some who say, there's Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, but I want Brahman. So they take help from bhakti, they do not offend bhakti, they do not consider Krishna temporary. So, with the assistance of bhakti, they attain Brahman. Those are the ones who attain Brahman, according to us. according to us, those who say only Brahman is real, Krishna is illusory, and so on, they do not attain Brahman. Because they offend bhakti, they offend Bhagavan, so they fall from whatever position they are. So that will be a little bit in connection to your question. So those who attain it take help from bhakti, and in that sense they remain eternally in that aspect of the Absolute. And one more point before concluding your question at least. We never know when we will conclude. But one could say, okay, but Shastra says, I don't know, verses like Jivara Sarbhai Krishna Nitya, every soul by constitution is a servant of Krishna. Mm-hmm. So what happens to those souls who go to Brahman?
Yeah.
How does that servanthood expresses itself? And we could give an example to try to illustrate that. It's like if you live in your house and you have a servant at home, and the servant is sleeping. He's still a servant, but he's sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
His servanthood is not operative. So every soul is constitutionally a servant of Krishna, even in Brahman, but they are sleeping to that sense of servanthood. Anyhow, some words on that. You have some question?
I think Prabhupada said this, that the soul is personal, and that's why when she enters Brahman, she cannot stay there for a long time. Why does he think like that?
Yeah, there we enter into. You have to read my book for that. I've written a whole book trying to clarify some of these controversies, and I mean, I'm not promoting my own book. I'm just saying that I've written quite a lot on that because we have statements like that in some of the commentaries of our acharyas. Even Prabhupada said at times that we fell from Golok. That's even more like, even in some sections of book from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, something like that is said also. Krishna Samhita, some very books in which you can see how the acharyas in some cases are adjusting their presentation, considering the adhikar of the audience. That's a big topic. The whole second half of my book is just about that, how to understand that. For example, Srila Prabhupada in some cases say, we fell from Golok Vrindavan. Now in another cases he say, it is a fact that nobody falls from Vaikuntha or from Golok. So you cannot take the two. No. Nobody falls, you fell. And it's not, I will choose the one that I like the most. That's not how Siddhanta is established. Rupa Goswami says in Lagu Bhagavatam Brita, Siddhanta is not established by cherry picking your favorite statement. But whenever two statements seems to conflict with one another, somehow you have to find some reconciliation. We spoke, of course, about that also with Krishna Chandra some days ago in the train. That's called Shastra Sangati, or reconciliation of facts. So if one of the two is Siddhanta, why the other thing has been said? And of course, they are depending the case, there are many ways to resolve that. In that particular case, yeah, I would say that in that case Srila Prabhupada was making a point. I mean, he was really strong on Advaita Bhat. If you read Prabhupada's books, you'll see that even maybe the verses speaking about cosmography or food, but he will find a way to go and smash Advaita Bhat. Somehow, he will connect two things and he starts to speak so strongly about that. So one, and you have to understand why, no? Because you can just imitate him and be a fanatical. For example, my Guru Maharaj, he's a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. He received from Prabhupada Harinam, Diksha, and Sannyas. So when Srila Prabhupada gave Sannyas to him, this was 1975, the inauguration of the Krishna Balaram temple. He gave him some instructions. And he told me one of the instructions that Srila Prabhupada gave him, every time you see a Mayavadi sannyas, you offer your obeisances to him. And my point is, if you were accustomed to read what Prabhupada would say, maybe you were thinking, the Prabhupada will say, if you see Mayavadi sannyasi, take your danda and start beating him or something. He didn't say that. He said, respect him. So my point is, he had this side also. So you have to see, to put all the sides of the equation on the scale. It's not. So when he was speaking strongly about that, he wanted to make a point like, if in the beginning my disciples do not know Siddhanta very clearly, many of them may come from an impersonal background in the hippie era. The only thing they know from India is just Advaita Vedanta. So if I not speak strongly, making the difference between Advaita Vedanta and Bhakti, they may think everything is the same thing, or make some hodgepodge, as they say in English, mixture of everything. And even in that sense, sometimes he will say, if you reach Brahman, you will fall from there. Not necessarily because you fall from there, because there are also statements where Prabhupada say, you don't fall from there. Indeed, I remember one, have one here, that the other day one the Buddha sent me. Let me share it with you. Oh, he says, I will just quote the line. He says, in liberation, one either attains the spiritual planets or merges into the existence of the Supreme. So he's speaking the concept of liberation. So if you say liberation, means you cannot fall from liberation. What type of liberation is that from which you can fall? You have to change the name. It's no longer liberation. It's no longer mukti. But the Bhagavatam uses the word mukti to refer to this. So I would say you have to understand as that type of teaching adjustment that sometimes the teacher will make. And there's many cases like that in history. With Sridhar Swami, many. No? Famous example, I don't know, comes to mind now, Narad Muni, no? With Mrigari, the hunter. No? He found a hunter who liked to kill, because he was a hunter, he had those samskars. Let's go to Valmiki, that's another one. That's a nice one. Valmiki, he was a killer, a thief, kills people. So he liked to work to glorify death. So Narada Muni say, oh my God, this is a heavy case here. So what you will like to glorify? Chant about Krishna. No. Valmiki say, I only like to glorify death. I like killing people. Okay, Narada Muni say. So then you chant the name of death. How do you say death in Sanskrit? Mara. So do you chant Mara? Glorify your Ishtadev. So you say Mara a few times, and you tell me what happens. Mara, 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 Mara. Suddenly you are chanting the name of Ram. And by that chanting, he became Valmiki, the famous author of the Ramayana. But Narada made a teaching adjustment. He didn't preach the Siddhanta at that moment. He said, okay, you do it like this. But he knew what will happen in time. To follow my point. So sometimes acharyas will take the liberty to make some adjustments, not because they don't know the Siddhanta, but because they see that we may not be able to fully digest everything now, but in time they will plan to give everything. Sometimes I give the example of a baby that will meet, not a baby, maybe an infant, 3-year-old boy, and ask his mother, Mom, how did I came to the world? Yeah. And the mother cannot explain the whole biological process for that. And she will say, one stork put you on a chimney one day, and you came. And the kid is like, wow, great story. Incredible. So that's enough for him at that age. A few years after, he will realize, Ma, you cheated me. Now give me the real thing. But the mother was not cheating, was just protecting him not to be too confused or anything. You follow the point, no? Sometimes this is happening also in our... We are sometimes like babies, as students, and our guru says, oh, you are still a baby, so I cannot give you the whole thing immediately. You may collapse. So, adjustment here. And in time, they will show the real thing of everything. Okay. One last quote, one line from Baladev Vidyabhushan in this connection. Going back to Prasad Lesh, but in another direction. Again, there are different ways. He says, this slight trace of mercy... What's for us, slight trace of mercy is bhaktas. Baladev Vidyabhushan said, slight trace of mercy is that which brings about hearing of Krishna Gata. And similar angas of bhakti. So in other words, when Brahma, the devotee, is asking, saying, by the grace of your mercy, we can know you. Because this is what the verse is saying, remember. Only by your mercy someone can know you. So Balad Vyabhushan means, what's that mercy? Hari Katha, Sadhu Sangha. By that you can know Krishna. That's how Krishna shows his mercy to you. By the association he's giving you with. Once one friend of mine said that. Krishna shows his mercy in the form of the association he's giving you in your life. That's Krishna's kripa. So that's what we are having the fortune to have now. No? Harikatha, satsanga. So Krishna is sharing his mercy so we can attain him in that way. So we'll conclude here today. And in our next class, in 2 days, because today we will have Ekadasi and will be silent day.
When? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow, yeah. So in 2 days we will continue with next verse and Brahma will continue intensifying his prayer, intensifying his longing, and getting closer and closer to his ecstatic praise of the Vrajavasis, no? As the ultimate long position to attain. No?
This is very clever. You make us longing now.
That's the idea. That's the idea.
You have to suffer one day.
You will suffer, but that suffering will make your heart expand. जय श्री गुरुदेव की जय श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय श्री श्री गौर गदाधर की जय श्री राधा गोविंद देव की जय ग्रंथरा श्रीमद् भागवतन की जय गौर भक्त वृंद की जय गौर प्रेमानंद हरि।